Good morning. Well, that worked. So far, so good. We're looking at the parable of the sower. Are both these mics on? Just in case. Feedback is scary when it happens. We'll be spending most of the time looking at the Matthew 13 version. And I've got extra material in case we run out. Let's double check that things are all working as planned. Oh, that's not doing anything. This is the part that I needed today. It's back there. Okay, so the parable of the sower, and we read some of Jesus' explanation, and it's in the bulletin, and it's one of the most familiar parables, right? So what could go wrong? Well, I've read through the parable. It's a good thing to do before you speak on it, and I read it again, and I read it again, and I read it again for weeks. I read it, and I realized, you know, I really don't know. There's some problems. Like, there's problems when you know something really well and you realize all of a sudden you don't know much about it. Like, there's something missing. There's something wrong. It's like when you can say you've been friends with someone for a really long time and someone asks you a really simple question, like, what do they like to eat? And you really don't know. And you say, well, that's not really satisfying. And these things happen. These things happen. And so Jesus is telling this story, and it's one that we're really pretty comfortable with. And I say, yeah, because I was talking to Larry the other day, and it was like, because we say, well, you know, if we're in church, we must be the good soil. Right? And then I just did that. Is it going out like it's going out here? I just wanted to know, because if it's going out, oh, no, it's not. So it's just me. Okay, so if I have to, I'll look that way. Which is bad practice. Don't do that. You're supposed to keep the audience contact. So we have this parable where Jesus is telling a story, and in the story, the first thing that strikes me, after the good part where I feel like I'm the good soil for a minute, I say, do you know what? 75% of the seed didn't make it. And that's not a comfortable statistic for me. Like 75% of the people that received the word, as he said, the sower goes out to sow, he sows the seed, and that 75% of the seed, you have three quarters of the seed doesn't survive. And then you add to that that of the three quarters, at least 25% don't even know it. And that's not counting the tares. They come up in the next parable. So you don't even know it, because it's like it never happened. And so all of a sudden I think, well, is this supposed to make me feel good? And I say, I don't feel so good. A problem for me in this parable as well is that it appears two things seem to be happening. One is that God's just watching. Right? It appears to be passive. And the other is that the soil just seems to be the way it is. Like you can't help it, right? You are where you are, right? If you're rocky, it's just the way it is. You know, if you're fertile, didn't really work at it, just am, right? And like talent, like other things that we claim to have or not have, it's just the way it is. So, and then worse, I think about other parables. All of a sudden, I'm reading this parable, and I start thinking about other parables, and this one is really, it causes me a lot of trouble. When you tell your children, by the way, that they're like 5-talent, 10-talent people to encourage them, and then they read this, it really doesn't make them feel better. So, because you're reading this and you see at the end of the parable, this happens. The man says, I know, you're a hard man. And You reap where you didn't sow. And you gather where you scattered no seed. And the response is, throw them out. Okay, and then we have Jesus who weeps over Jerusalem, and we have God who desires that no one should perish, and I'm confused. So this guy was just scared, and he didn't make it. And so then we consider these other passages, like, for example, in Malachi 3:6, where God tells Israel, look, the only reason you're still here is because I'm still here. And this has been a fascination of mine since childhood. When you see a tree growing in some random spot, and say, I not only don't know how you're living there, I don't know how the seed ever got there. And who knows, right? And you'll see this every now and then. There's just no way that it could be alive. And it's alive. And so this leaves me this sort of hope that maybe there's more to the story. And then there's also this bit where Jesus just got finished telling us that it's going to be better, right? Because if Jesus is telling us that not only are you lost, but I just came here to remind you, I don't think that's helping. You know, ignorance is bliss. And Jesus is saying, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. It's a wonderful passage for people because people are burdened. People go through this world thinking that this is not something I would have chosen. I wouldn't have chosen life if I'd had it to choose. Job said that, right? Job said, why is life given? Why is life given to the bitter of spirit, the bitter of heart? And why didn't I perish in the day of my birth? He said, all the good won't make up for what's happening right now. And people are doing that all the time. They're facing that kind of crisis. And sometimes people will talk to you that just seems to be random, just throwing this as an aside point, that God gave you something for them. He gave me something for them. And I have a responsibility to those people. Because sometimes you're the person, right? That person needs help. They don't need help from someone, they need help from you. So our life as Christians is partly preparing for those moments to be able to supply. It's like first aid, you read the book, but you don't know how to do it. That's pretty useless, right? And so we need to be prepared. But Jesus is saying, my burden is easy, my yoke is light. Come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden. So there's that bit. And then we add to it this, kind of bringing it forward in imagery, but Jesus had a lot of messed up friends, right? A lot of messed up friends. This is coming in Matthew 19. I think this is partly why his family came to collect him, if you remember. His brothers and his mother, they all come, and they gather, and they say, come on, we got to get him out of here. And it's because all of his friends are people that no one hangs out with. And yet Jesus does. This is a picture from the book, Calvin Miller's book, The Singer. And he's describing a situation where the singer, who is in the metaphor Jesus, is propositioned by a prostitute for friendship. Of course, he ignores her surface request and goes to the deeper issue. And as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name. It's very similar to what Larry just read in John 5. You had to receive him. Now, okay, so that's both easier and harder, right? Because it's easier, I think, in that it's simpler. But it means receiving all of him, not just that part which fits with who I am and what I want to be in life. And we'll come back to that later, because we've got problems. I just like this image, because if you don't know where you are and you're in a boat and you can't walk on water, you do have a problem. It's like three layers deep. I know, O Lord, that man's way is not in himself, nor is it a man who walks to direct his steps. That's what Jeremiah is saying, and he knows very well. For 43 years, I believe, he spoke to a people who could not hear him. They not only did not hear him, they could not. He says that their heart and their ears don't work anymore. But God said, you got to give that message. So we're kind of like that. I like to think that I'm the good and the listening and the attentive one, but I know that I've got issues. And then when I don't understand something, I don't know to ask the question because I don't know so, I know so little that I don't know that I don't know. It's like nodding. It happens a lot, right? You nod and... There was Alan Alda one time. Alan Alda, the actor, was giving an interview with a fellow on theoretical physics or astrophysics. He was doing this interview, and he's going, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And he said, who am I kidding? I said, no, I can imagine. I'm an actor, right? But I said, I really don't know what you're talking about. And so something very simple like justice, well, Jesus understands justice. You know, people came to him, the lawyer, he understood justice, he thought, right? He calls him good teacher. Jesus says, you don't know what you're talking about. Why do you call me good? Only God's good. You know, he strikes out, coming right out of the box, right? It's just, you don't know what you're talking about. But God is just. And when we get into this place where we start thinking that we know what we're talking about and we don't know what we're talking about, and we face this kind of, well, you know, somebody's wrong. I hope it's not me. Then we start doing funny things to each other. Now, some have called this precarious grace. Precarious grace. Or precarious salvation. Where we don't have that sense of knowing that we're saved. We just have a sense that somebody's saved and we're hoping it's us. And then we move into this other way. An extension of that is that working? Okay. That we stop looking at ourselves, or what we look at, we don't see. We make it up, right? So we're reading but not perceiving. And then, well, I don't know why this picture comes to mind, but it's just like crabby people, right? We're crabby people. And then you say peace, joy, evangelism. I really don't see that happening. I mean, if I'm miserable, why would I invite you to the party? You know, so... So we have this insecurity, and there's this question, how safe is your church? You know, when you meet people on the street, we're coming back to that earlier proposition that when someone has a problem, you need to help them, and you think it would be wonderful to be able to invite you to church and know that it's going to be better for having come. But sometimes we don't know that. If it's not working for you, why would it work for them? Well, you have the suspicion that whatever's wrong with them will be made worse, and that they will add onto the layer of the problem a layer of shame, guilt, and, you know, and so on, scrutiny. How safe do you feel? How transparent can you be here? So contrast that with a more favorite passage of mine, you know, with John, or rather Luke 15. The parables of the lost things, the lost coin, the lost sheep, the lost son. And in those parables, Jesus is describing a God who's very active in seeking and searching and claiming what was lost, what is outside of its own, it's outside of the control of the thing. It can't change. And so God goes to get it. It's not like soil lying there inert. And so, well, I feel better, but I don't know how to reconcile these two. So here's a couple of thoughts. One is the context. If we look at the context, what's going on, Jesus is doing laps. He's doing laps. And every time he makes a lap through Galilee, more people join him. You know, he just more and more and more. And then he comes to a place where there are thousands of people. Who's in the audience? Well, they're mostly Galileans, but who are those people? We've got the Pharisees. We know they're there. We have those people who want something. And some of them think they can make him a king. He'd be great as a king, right? And some of them are hungry. You know, some of them are curious. They want to see a miracle. Jesus says an evil and adulterous generation looks out for miracles because we want something other than him, something other than truth. C.S. Lewis, coming back to the question of are you in or out, are you right or wrong, are you good or bad, he put it this way in his book, The Great Divorce, that there are people having Bible studies in hell. And when they're invited by their relatives to come to heaven and see what it's really like, they don't want to go because they're busy. And so we have in the Pharisees and perhaps in some of the others, you're just preoccupied with the way we do life. And what God has to add to it isn't enough. So in a sense, wanting to go to heaven isn't better than wanting to stay here. It's just more for some people. If it's not Jesus, it's not enough. If it's not God, it's not enough, because it's not where you are, it's who you are. It's how you are, and most specifically, it's being with him that matters. And a lot of people don't get that, and of course the apostles, they do to some extent, and then there's his family. So there's all these people, and there's the conditions. There's some things that are going on that are immediate. These people are gathered right now in droves. Jesus is in a boat because they can't fit him on the shore, right? And so we have, like in Luke 12, one said, thousands of people were stepping on each other. And at that time, Jesus turned to his disciples and said, beware the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So it's a different situation. We always picture Jesus with his 12, not Jesus with his 12,000. And that's what it's coming to be. And then things are changeable. This parable isn't meant to be for all time for everyone at every stage of life. Otherwise, certain people that didn't listen at the beginning, you would expect not to listen at the end, like Nicodemus, like Joseph of Arimathea, didn't have the guts. You know, they're just not going to make it. They're going to be those shallow soil people, the ones that under duress, they don't make it, right? And it had ongoing application, of course. These things are principles. If you step outside of these frames, like you get involved in these things or you don't cultivate yourself, if you will, if God doesn't work with you on those issues, then you're going to fail to really achieve the best. Now, tell me how much time we've got. Is it 2 minutes now? Do you know? Because I don't really know. How many minutes, Jesus? Five, ten? Five? Do you know? Okay. Well, if you say, you know, it's something like this. Okay, so here we go. A couple of quick points. Jesus is the sower. Jesus is also the seed. I want to know about me. Jesus isn't talking about me. He's talking about him. Right? More. And the power is always in God. So God is the Lord of harvest. He's not even really part of the story, but he's always there. So one of the things I want to remember when I read this parable is that the power is in the seed. And the seed is Jesus. It's not this. This is an underrepresentation. I mean, certainly the Bible itself has some bearing, but it's Jesus is much more than the Bible. And certainly more than my understanding of the Bible. The living and active Word of God, Hebrews 4, verse 12. And a caveat, of course, is that bad seed can look good. He tells us that in verses 24 through 30. You know, the tares look like wheat until they see the fruit. So there's a kind of uncertainty. And coming back to the parable, here's a few thoughts. We need to encourage each other. You know, seed is being scattered into your life today and every day, and a lot of it's going to waste. My life too. So we need to remind each other not just of what it says, but of what we're doing about what it says. When we, a guy named Tobias Wolff wrote about his friends in the Vietnam War, and one of the things I remember that he said in the book, and soldiers, and I think it was soldiers in the Pharaoh's army, He talks about a friend of his, and he describes his friendship with them in youth. He said, we were those who would hold each other to the best dreams of our youth. You know, friends don't let friends live stupid. We're Christians. You don't let people just drift off. We don't let people let go. We encourage each other because you don't know when you're going to need them to encourage you. The Pharisees, they've read the scripture. Jesus tells them, you can't understand because you listen to each other. Your only concern is whether you like each other. Your only concern is how you seem. Jesus said, because of that, you'll never understand what I'm talking about. We got this shallow, and there's always those birds to come around and take it away. And so then we got the shallow soil, and he tells us that suffering, right, the persecution, they just can't bear it. And I think, yeah, so we're just going to have to work at that. Do you know there are people in this world who really do suffer? Richard Wurmbrand was a minister of the Free Church, the Independent Church, in Romania, and he was imprisoned for, I think, almost 15 years. Much of that in solitary confinement, much of that was with torture. And yet he said that the worst thing that happened to him was coming here when he was freed. Because here he was faced with indolence. There he was faced with death. Here, the attack was on his soul. There, the attack was on his body. This is happening now. We need to pray for these people. And they need to pray for us. We need to pray for ourselves that we'll be strong. And we need to practice enduring hardship. The thorns. Well, sometimes the thorns can be the silliness of life, the things that we get involved in that don't need to be. We see it all around us. And sometimes it's the busyness of life, the things that we get involved in that seem good but are really not consistent with God's plan. Jesus talks about this all the time. You know the people that rip off their parents so they can engage in spiritual enterprises? Peter tells us, prepare our minds for action. He tells us, do not be conformed to the former lusts, and he tells us to fervently love one another. Specific things to do. Well, we have the good soil. It doesn't look better. But it is. Paul described himself as the worst, the chief of sinners. One who didn't deserve, one who was a blasphemer and a violent aggressor and a persecutor of the church. But he was good soil. Problem is, no one would talk to him. No one could talk to him. And Jesus had to step in. Jesus always has to step in. So coming back to an earlier thought, as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. And I suppose this would be a good time. If you have a need for prayer, and we all do, or we have a need for him, and we all do, this would be a good time. I'd like to invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.